91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today's program is an update on the Zika virus in Florida. Before the holiday weekend, Miami-Dade County led the state in reported diagnoses with 48. Broward was second highest with 17. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. The disease has not been transmitted locally by mosquitoes, but with the region's rainy season upon us, insect transmission cases are likely to arise here. There's likely to be increased air traffic from Zika-affected areas, such as Brazil, which hosts the Summer Olympics in August. 4 or 5 people who contract the virus don't exhibit symptoms. We'll have experts on hand with the updates on diagnosing and a report on regional efforts for mosquito control. That's next. First, it's the news. And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, Tuesday edition. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. So today we examine the latest information on the mosquito-borne virus disease known as Zika.
Its lesser common symptoms include mild fever, skin rash, muscle and joint pain, and conjunctivitis.
But 4 or 5 people who contract Zika don't have symptoms, and it's best treated by rest.
A Zika-infected pregnant woman risks bearing an infant with a neurological birth defect. So we'll discuss Zika and Florida from a medical standpoint and also from the mosquito control outlook.
With us is Dr. Mario Stevenson, a University of Miami Miller School of Medicine professor and chief of infectious diseases.
Also, he's involved in developing a diagnostic test for the Zika virus and an expert in HIV and AIDS research. Welcome to you, Doctor.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is an expert from the insect control side. He's Chalmers Vasquez, Miami-Dade County's mosquito control manager. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
Welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Dr. Stevenson, I'd like to begin with you because in researching for today's program, what struck me are the many unknowns about Zika and all the conflicting opinions from one doctor and scientist to another. Is this just a case of not knowing enough about the virus itself, or is this unremarkable? Is this always the case when you have something new like this?
Let me try and put it in perspective. We have, since the discovery of HIV in 1982, over 300,000 scientific publications. That's our knowledge base on HIV, and that's what we use to understand the better the enemy that we're dealing with. Since Zika was discovered in the Zika forest in 1947, there have been 750 publications, scientific publications. That's our knowledge base, which is really pretty skimpy. And so we're building that knowledge base so that we can better understand what seems to be a daily changing scenario.
I mean, it's changing not only in terms of who it's affecting, but the effects of it and how it's transmitted. Everything seems to be changing from day to day here.
Yeah, so we never thought of flaviviruses, which is the family of viruses that Zika is part of, as a sexually transmitted disease, but now we're right. Treating it as a sexually transmitted disease.
How fast can the mutations occur?
Zika doesn't change that much. The viruses that were isolated in Zika forest are very much similar to the viruses that were isolating from areas of Brazil, for example, in Puerto Rico. There are some changes. It's unclear whether those changes mean that the virus is adapting. It's not like HIV, where HIV is continually mutating and adapting to its environment.
Why? Because there have been so few cases since 1947, why has it seemed to take such a stronghold in Brazil right now?
Well, there are various theories, one being the population density in regions of Brazil, how the virus got to Brazil, probably through the Confederations Cup, where there were some soccer fans from a region in French Polynesia that had Zika touring around Brazil following their team. And then, of course, any mosquitoes that pick up the virus are going to be unhindered because there's very little mosquito control in Brazil.
With so many people converging on Brazil for the Olympics this summer, what will be the effect on the virus or the virus on them and when they go home?
Still, the greatest threat and the one that we have to really worry about is the effect on the pregnant women or women who are trying to become pregnant. So the guidelines are really focused on those individuals. For the general population, there is really no reason to change your lifestyle, no reason to change your travel plans unless you and your partner are trying to conceive.
Okay, let's bring in Chalmers Vasquez. Chalmers, welcome.
Thank you.
Since all the Zika cases thus far in the U.S., as of May 18th at least, were travel-related, what is the policy right now, the current policy, regarding this particular mosquito and the aegypti? You can tell us exactly.
Yes,
the mosquito in Miami-Dade.
In reality, we've been dealing with this mosquito species for the longest time. Well, the last couple hundred years we've been dealing with it. This mosquito was the cause of outbreaks of yellow fever and dengue in the past.
Right.
But for about 50 years, five decades, it was not a problem. It was just a nuisance mosquito until 2009. And 2009 in the Florida Keys and 2010 in Miami-Dade County, we had the first locally transmitted case of dengue fever. That was probably, you know, brought in by people traveling to the Caribbean, South and Central America, with where there was an outbreak of disease. Actually, we don't control disease; we control the vector. So we actually, for us, it's pretty much a business as usual. We have investigated probably mosquito control measure for 342 cases that the Department of Health has referred to us. Of course, of those 48 have been confirmed. They are all travel related.
Right.
So there haven't been any homegrown.
There's nothing that the health department can say or anybody else can say that there is a local transmission. So we've been dealing with this situation on a daily basis, and we are telling the population, our residents, what the measure they need to take to avoid, you know, collect water around the house. They can eliminate the mosquito breeding ground for this particular species.
Do we know, is it possible to know what percentage of the mosquito population is this Aedes aegypti, which transmits all these viruses?
I don't think there is any answer to that, you know, but the mosquito is it's the most prevalent species in Miami-Dade County. It's found, Miami-Dade County is pretty big. We have more than 200 miles, square miles of populated area where this mosquito can be found. You know, it's going to vary the intensity of the density of the population, but can be found anywhere. So as come to what percentage of the mosquito population can get infected by the virus, I don't know, maybe Dr. has some data on that.
There isn't any good evidence, any good data on that yet. We don't know what percentage is Zika infected, and that's part of our limited knowledge base.
How do we know that this particular mosquito has not developed immunity to the chemicals that we use to spray?
Well, there's a test that you can run on the mosquito population. There's a very simple test developed by the CDC where you capture mosquitoes, and it's called the bottle bioassay, where you impregnate the walls of these bottles, and you put a number of mosquitoes, and then you measure the time it takes them to die, and there's some established baseline on the time that they may be alive before being after being exposed to the chemical. That's how we run a Miami-Dade County some of those tests, and we haven't found any evidence of resistance to any of the pesticides we use in this particular species.
Now that the rainy season has arrived in South Florida, do you expect there to be some homegrown cases of this?
Well, I hope not, but the probability
is it likely.
It could be. You remember, you need two tango. We have the mosquito population, we have the environmental conditions, and if somebody brings in the virus, transmission may happen. We're hoping not. That's why we're working so hard, you know, every day, trying to tell our residents that the best approach to do this is to eliminate the mosquitoes' breeding ground, which is stand and swimming pools, buckets, any can that accumulates water in small quantities.
Just think how many old tires are abandoned in this county that can hold water.
Right.
Many, many, many. As we approach the rain, I believe we're already in the rainy season. There are thousands and thousands of containers that are going to fill up with water that eventually would breed mosquitoes. That's our main concern right now. We have containers, we have bromeliads in our county that also breed mosquitoes, and we have a problem in reality with this mosquito breeding with this particular species.
I'm wondering, is there any, since all of these cases have been travel-related, are we doing anything with airports to stop it, the spread of it?
I think if you go through Miami International, Fort Lauderdale, even Atlanta International Airport, you'll see lots of travel advisories regarding Zika, which is very appropriate. The problem with trying to identify homegrown Zika cases is only 20% of the individuals who get infected show the symptoms, but they could still transmit. They could still be hosts for the virus.
Explain that a little further. So somebody gets the virus, but they show no symptoms.
They show no symptoms, and yet they transmit the virus to their partner, and the partner's thinking, well, I got infected when I was on vacation. I didn't get it from my partner because my partner didn't show any symptoms. But that's where the health department comes in terms of following individuals that someone with symptoms was in contact with to really nail down whether it was a homegrown case or whether it was a travel-related case.
I'm holding a picture here from Miami International Airport, and these are big signs that are going up as we speak in the airport. It reads, passengers, if you are traveling to a tropical country, underlined, you could be exposed to Zika virus from mosquito bites and not know it. Cover your skin, use EPA-registered insect repellents with DEET, and wear protective clothing, long sleeves, long pants, and socks. And of course, drain standing water before and on your return home. So that's gone up right now at MIA.
We have a question, and I'd like you to, an emailer, which we haven't opened the phones or emails yet, but it's a question I want to ask you. How long does the Zika virus remain active in the body? If a young woman travels to a Zika-affected area, contracts the virus, if she gets pregnant years later, would the infection remain an issue?
I wish I could answer that question because of the limited knowledge base. The virus shouldn't stay in the body for long. Once the immune system kicks in, it should flush the virus out. But we're dealing with an unknown entity, so the virus could remain dormant in the nervous system for extended intervals. What those extended intervals might be, we need to find out. That's an area of intense investigation right now.
It is.
Could you also cover on the birth side of things? Of course, a pregnant woman faces some serious risk. But how long does the virus remain active in a woman's body before she can become pregnant if she's contracted the disease? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Let me try and answer.
Does a person have to wait to get pregnant?
The WHO is saying 8 weeks. They just revised the numbers from 4 weeks to 8 weeks. So if you've had symptoms, you should wait at least 8 weeks before trying to conceive. And again, I would emphasize caution. Why try and time things when the consequences are so dire?
We're speaking with Dr. Mario Stevenson. He's a professor of medicine, chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at the Miller School of Medicine at U of M, and an internationally known HIV/AIDS researcher. Also with us, Chalmers Vasquez. He's Miami-Dade County's Mosquito Control Operations Manager and an entomologist. We're going to take a short break. We will come back, and we will open the phones and take your emails shortly. Stay with us.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Of course, today we're examining the latest information on the mosquito-borne virus disease, known as Zika. We have Dr. Mario Stevenson with us. He's a University of Miami Miller School of Medicine professor. He's chief of infectious diseases. Also, Chalmers Vasquez, Miami-Dade County's mosquito control manager. If you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, you're certainly welcome. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, you can get in by email. That's radio@WLRN.org.
Okay, Chalmers, Miami-Dade County's Mosquito Control Operations Manager, Chalmers Vasquez. Let's talk a little about the mosquito, this particular mosquito, and is it native to our region?
No, actually, this is an exotic mosquito species. It came to America through the slave trade. That's what I say, you know, it's been 100 years with us. But it's a very adaptable mosquito, you know, it's... it is very difficult to control. It exploits very small amounts of water. That's why that makes it very hard to control. It shows a behavior that makes it very difficult also to spill like flying is not a mosquito that that fly very actively. It does it in the morning for a very short time, and it does it in the evening again. So you're going to spray for him early in the morning is very difficult because sometimes the environmental conditions are not conducive for this kind of control.
And it's the females.
Yes. Yeah. That's why we insist in telling our residents that they need to do is to eliminate the accumulation of water around the house.
Do you have an education branch with your department that informs people of or goes around and informs people of what they should do around their houses?
Ever since the governor declared the state of emergency for Zika, the county has been taking steps to inform our residents on how to avoid, you know, these mosquitoes being around the house, how to be bit by this mosquito in particular.
And when do you anticipate that you're going to start spraying, and what kind of notice do residents have?
Well, we've been spraying all along. Remember, this is, a few months back was supposed to be the dry season, but in reality, we were under the influence of El Nino all this time. So it was raining on and off. So we've been finding a little bit of mosquito breeding all along. But now, with the arrival of the rainy season, you know, we expect that, as I said before, 100,000 probably containers are going to fill up with water, which eventually may breed mosquitoes.
And some plants fill up with water also.
Bromeliad
plants. It's a plant that is also exotic. It's not native to this plant. To this part of the country. It comes from Central and South America, but for some people, they have an appeal for our resident, and they like it. They also create a problem.
How about those people with outdoor fish ponds or perhaps butterfly gardens? Do they have reason to worry about the spraying?
Not really. You know, we sprayed up. It's a very, very, to control these mosquitoes, it's a very focal spray. You know, it's directed to what these mosquitoes are. We do it by handheld sprayers. Then we have another mosquito species that creates a lot of nuisance during the summer times, and then we use aerial spraying for that. And we do it at a time where these beneficial insects are not active to avoid killing them. We have butterfly species that are endangered species now. And we work in conjunction with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that allowing us to do our application, avoiding the areas where these butterfly species may be present.
Well, we have perhaps another view on the mosquito spraying, particularly in Miami-Dade County. We have South Miami Mayor Dr. Philip Stoddard on the line with us. He's also a biologist at FIU. Dr. Stoddard, Mayor Stoddard, tell us your view on the Zika mosquito spraying that's going on now, and why the City of South Miami, you and the Commission, are against it.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I agree with Mr. Vasquez on virtually everything he's told you so far about the biology of this animal and the need to control it at the water source. One of the things that we've learned about mosquito spraying in general is that it promotes evolution of resistance. And because Aedes aegypti has such a short life cycle, it essentially outbreeds our insecticides. I have dozens and dozens of papers that I've collected showing how all through the Caribbean, virtually every island, in Mexico, in Brazil, in countries in Southeast Asia, where you know, dengue has been a problem, and now chikungunya, and now increasingly Zika, you know, government agencies have gone after the mosquitoes very aggressively, as you would think they should. But what's happened now is that there's a number of sites on the mosquito genomes that have evolved to make the insecticide not stick to its target anymore. There's other mutations that have arisen that enhance the mosquito's ability to detoxify the insecticides. And so if there's a disease outbreak in South Miami, I absolutely want, you know, mosquito control to be able to come in and kill the adults. And I want to know that the kill is 100% effective. And so, you know, based on what's happened in our, you know, nearby islands in the Caribbean, I'm very concerned that if we spray adults that are not infected, what we're doing is promoting the evolution of resistance. Mm. And so we have not yet seen in Miami-Dade County resistance evolving, but once it appears, it moves very quickly. It takes about 2 years.
Okay, let's get a reaction from Chalmers Vasquez, Mayor Stoddard.
Yeah, I agree with that. Dr. Stoddard says that insects in general, you know, if you're overspraying, they wouldn't develop resistance eventually. But at this point, we're under a state of emergency. The CDC, World Health Organization, everybody's saying that we need to spray. You know, and our work is to provide, protect the health and well-being of the residents of this county. And we operate under Chapter 388 of the Florida Statutes, and you read it, it's there that we need to maintain and provide a level of arthropod control, especially under threat of such a horrible disease as Zika.
Well, Dr. Stoddard, is it possible that it should be spray now and ask questions later?
No, that's absolutely wrong. And in fact, there was another NPR program on last week where they had interviews with various people, and there's an entomologist at Cornell University who said spraying for Aedes aegypti is insane. She said you're just going to promote the evolution of resistance, and that's exactly what I'm saying as well. So, I mean, we've seen this happen over and over again. Why do we need to repeat failed experiments? Now, and so, you know, there's a state of emergency. We have to take this very seriously, but let's also take something into consideration. We do not have active transmitted infections in Miami-Dade County. When you do, you nail the spot. And mosquito control has done that. They have been very effective at suppressing dengue, for instance. So we've had lots of dengue outbreaks locally. Mosquito control comes in. They spray the block where the, you know, where they had the transmission, and poof, they knock it out. And that's exactly what we want them to do. And so my concern is if we start spraying now, say in South Miami, mosquitoes in South Miami develop resistance. And then when you come in and spray, you get, say, a 50% kill rate instead of a 100% kill rate. And that means that half of your mosquitoes that are transmitting the disease you want to knock down have escaped, and they're free to not only bite somebody else, but they're now your breeding population, and they pass on those genes.
Mayor, in South Miami, should an individual resident want their property sprayed, can they do it on their own?
Sure.
Or is it against city regulations?
No, they can do it.
Okay. Chalmers, what were you going to respond to Mayor Stoddard?
As I say, we operate under Florida statutes, and it is our job to provide this protection for our we don't know the virus is circulating in this area, so we don't want to wait until we have an outbreak of disease before we start doing this.
But do you agree that what he's saying, because I asked you about that, if the mosquito could become immune to the spray, what do you say to his...
It's a well-known fact that insects under the pressure of insecticide spraying may develop insecticide resistance.
Do you change the components of the spray?
There's options here that where you can rotate your insecticide stock and use a different molecule to delay that development of resistance in many cases.
Well, Mayor Dr. Philip Stoddard of South Miami, we certainly appreciate you coming on with your side of the story. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
This is Topical Currents. We're going to take a short break on our program and be back with more.
Welcome back to Monday's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and we're talking about the Zika virus with Dr. Mario Stevenson, Professor of Medicine and Chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at the Miller School of Medicine at University of Miami. And Chalmers Vasquez is Miami-Dade County's Mosquito Control Operations Manager and an entomologist. We do have a lot of emails and a lot of calls, so we're going to get to you, as many of you as we can.
Please
we
be ask brief.
You to be brief and be patient. Before we do that, though, Dr. Stevenson, I just want to talk about this other link now, not just to this microcephaly, but and other severe brain defects in pregnant women, but in the fetuses. But now we're hearing it might affect the nervous system of some people. It's been linked in Brazil to something like Guillain-Barré syndrome, a neurological disorder. What is that? What is, just tell us where that stands.
It's basically a paralysis that can be mild to severe, depending on the individual. It's rare. It's been reported to be more common in individuals who were infected with Zika. It's unclear whether it's classic Guillain-Barré or whether it's just the fact the virus is infecting peripheral nerves and inflaming them and causing symptoms similar to Guillain-Barré. But it's far less common than what we're seeing with the birth defects in the fetus.
Are the elderly vulnerable to the Zika as much as pregnant women? Or are people with compromised immune systems, let me put it that way, more vulnerable to the Zika virus?
As yet, that's unclear. We just don't have the numbers to make any positive statements in that regard.
Okay. Well, we have a lot of emailers.
Let's start with a caller. Tatanya in Miami. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
I'm in Miami. I am now about 10 weeks pregnant. I was traveling to Puerto Rico, where I was bit by many mosquitoes about 8 weeks before conception. And the Department of Health, fortunately, did call me and do an interview and approved me for a Zika test. They also came to my house and inspected for mosquitoes, so I do see Miami-Dade is doing quite a bit of work to, I guess, get on top of this virus. Just one question, and I guess I'm speaking to a scientist now, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so I won't ask you about the city, but first of all, what is the chance that if you're bitten by a mosquito later, maybe in the second or third trimester, that the fetus is affected?
The birth defects can occur in pregnant women infected with Zika at any stage in pregnancy, first, second, or third trimester. So even women who were bitten and infected late in their pregnancy can still have issues.
And if I was bitten, say, 3 months before or even 2 months before conception, do I build any antibodies against the virus?
Technically, yes. The WHO recommendation is that women should not try to conceive within 8 weeks of showing symptoms of Zika infection. So your 12 weeks, I think that's very positive, timing. But again, we have a very limited knowledge base, so we can't be absolute in predicting the risk.
Doctor, what if she's asymptomatic?
Asymptomatic, then there'll be no signs. You will obviously have strong prenatal counseling and follow up. I wish you all the best and hope everything turns out well for you.
Okay, thanks for your
thank
call.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Stevenson, talk about your diagnostic test that you're working on now in its development.
Yeah, because Zika came on the scene so recently, there hasn't been time to mobilize and develop a diagnostic test that meets FDA standards that can be used in the US. There are some what's called plaque reduction assays that's been used by the state health department, but it's slow and laborious. So scientists are really mobilizing quickly to come up with diagnostics that the FDA will approve and that are good for screening and that will be able to inform for reproductive health reasons. If you're trying to conceive, are you safe to conceive? We need those things real quickly. So we are basically almost done with a test that will do that.
And when do you see that being complete?
We anticipate field testing, meaning putting it through its paces in Brazil within a month or so. And then we will obviously entertain dialogue with the FDA to try and have it implemented here in the U.S.
Mr. Vasquez, I understand that in many of the states most likely to have a large mosquito population along the lower south, southern states, there's fewer funds allocated for mosquito control. Could there possibly eventually, maybe this would cause it, this outbreak, some sort of a national mosquito control plan?
It's probably. There are so many states now where you can find this mosquito species. Of course, Miami-Dade County is ground zero in regards to travel-related confirmed cases. But during the summertime, this mosquito could be
And Broward is second, so they're also
Broward is second. So I believe Orlando is going to be just a concentration of Puerto Ricans living in Orlando. So there's an outbreak in Puerto Rico of Zika. So Orlando could be maybe the third county under the same situation. The summer is going to be it's going to tell us a lot of things, because the rain and the good weather it's good for the mosquitoes to develop very rapidly. So if we get the virus circulating in our area, we may have a problem.
Ernesto has two questions. One for Dr. Stevenson. The tetracycline antibiotics have shown benefit in blocking neurological complications and other conditions caused by viruses of the same family as the Zika virus, such as the Japanese encephalitis virus, dengue, and chikungunya. Why not test its efficacy in Zika infections?
There are several labs in Brazil and in the U.S. actually testing a number of tetracycline analogs, as well as other agents, small molecules that have been used for flaviviruses to see if they have any efficacy against Zika. Unfortunately, some of these compounds don't work specifically, so it's hard to predict whether they're going to be virus-specific or have any efficacy, but the work is going at a fast pace.
Okay, and his question for you, Chalmers Vasquez, we have only a few hundred cases of Zika virus, all of which are imports. We know where these cases are located. Should mosquito eradication campaigns be designed to target the streets and neighborhoods where the cases live rather than just do random spraying?
The way this mosquito behaves does not allow for area-wide spraying. So what we're doing is just going to the places where referred by the health department, and we implement mosquito control measure around. So it's not going to be a widespread, I believe, area-wide application of pesticide for this mosquito,
okay,
because this mosquito is very difficult to control. And go back to the same thing, elimination of water is what we really need to do. That's why the message we're trying to get across to our residents before the rainy season establishes itself.
And back to our callers, Jasmine in Hialeah Gardens. Hi there.
Hi. I'm always wary of fear-mongering and whatnot. Personally, I'm not afraid of getting pregnant. I've had a tubal ligation, but I do have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. And, I have no idea what kind of, if they got bit, and got Zika, what would happen to them. I'm also not terribly worried about it for them because we don't have Zika in South Florida. So, I'm just worried about parents not letting their kids out this summer at all for a disease that hasn't even arrived here yet. And then when it does, how worried should we be if our children do acquire Zika somehow? What can happen? What's the worst case scenario?
Well, my opinion, I think I mentioned earlier that unless you're planning to become pregnant, you should not change your lifestyle because of fear of Zika-infected mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. And that's why I don't think the Olympics should. I don't understand the dialogue behind shifting the Olympic Games. So we should continue with our lives, but at the same time be vigilant and make sure that we're controlling, water in our neighbourhood, receptacles that can hold stagnant water. Better to be, to hope for the best but prepare for the worst.
But the symptoms, for the most part, would be flu-like.
For 20% of individuals who show symptoms, but right, the 80% who don't.
So only 1 in 5 show the symptoms.
Yes.
Right. Okay, Jasmine.
Thank you, Jasmine.
Okay, thank you.
You mentioned about the Olympic Games, Dr. Stevenson, and so you know about the 100 physicians and scientists that wrote that open letter to the WHO saying that the game should be postponed. or moved, and then the CDC and the WHO both responded saying that that should not be done. So who do you believe?
Again, it's opinion. My opinion is the Olympics should continue. Many, many athletes have spent their best part of their lives priming themselves, peaking at the right moment for the Olympic Games. My opinion is they go ahead as is. We shouldn't change our lifestyles unless, of course, we're planning to get pregnant.
Okay, this Derek wants you to talk about how long the virus stays in the body, which, again, you don't know, but is there any data you could talk about where a patient exhibited signs after 5 or 6 months? My wife and I are supposed to go to the Olympics, but are worried about contracting the virus. We were looking to get pregnant next year.
The data indicates, and the WHO recommendation indicates, that 8 weeks after being exposed, you're Zika free. The virus should not linger. But with a limited knowledge base, I, for one, would not make that an absolute recommendation. Scientists always are cautious and sort of curmudgeon-y types of individuals who never say never say, it's speaking absolutes. Until we have the data, we can't say that it's going to be 4 weeks or 8 weeks. We have to be always erring on the side of caution.
We're speaking about the Zika virus on today's Topical Currents with Dr. Mario Stevenson from the University of Miami, the chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases, and Chalmers Vasquez is Miami-Dade County's Mosquito Control Operations Manager. Another short break, and we will be back and take more of your calls and emails.
And we're back. We have a little discussion going on among the experts here on Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. Of course, we're talking about the virus disease known as Zika, the mosquito-borne Zika virus, with Dr. Mario Stevenson of the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. He's the chief of infectious diseases there. And also Chalmers Vasquez, Miami-Dade County's mosquito control manager.
And Chalmers, here's an email for you. John wants to know, he tries to avoid having standing water as much as possible to avoid mosquito larvae. However, in a recent trip to a park in Palm Beach County, he learned about mosquito fish. Can this type of fish be effective in controlling mosquito larvae? I already have a pond which I have introduced the fish to control mosquitoes around my house.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very effective biological control provided by the mosquito fish.
Okay.
We can stock his pool if he calls 311 and requests that the mosquito fish be put in his pond, and we'll provide that service.
Okay, so for all of those who have a pond, they can say that
right,
again.
Right, right. You fear that there's going to be mosquitoes at any given time, and we can do that. We do that on a daily basis with the standing swimming pools.
So you could set up an appointment at 311.
Yeah, they need to call 311, and they just request the stocking a pool with mosquito fish, and we will respond to that. We will provide that service.
Okay.
Yes.
And next up, Marty in Tamarack. Hi there.
Hello?
Hi, Marty. Go ahead.
Okay. I deliberately put out containers of water in my backyard. I have 6 or 8 containers, and I check them every day or two. When I see mosquito larvae in them, I pour it out, and I replenish the water. This way I know I'm killing a lot of potential mosquitoes. What do you think about
Chalmers,
that?
Chalmers, is that wise?
Well, that depends how you do it. You don't let them go to the adult stage, so we're going to breed mosquito for the entire neighborhood. If you're going to do that, you need to be doing on a regular basis. Don't forget that you need to kill the mosquito larvae. That could be good. That's a good approach, I believe. But it's not recommended, you know, because you may forget about it, and then you're going to start breeding mosquitoes, and that creates a problem.
Well, it takes anywhere from 4 days to 14 days from an egg to a full-grown mosquito,
yes,
depending on the variety. So
yes,
if I'm doing this every other day, I'm not going to miss any. Last week, I was away for 2 days. When I got back on the third day, I had thousands of mosquito larvae in some of my containers.
But you shouldn't be doing that. Yeah, you may forget what you're doing.
Playing with fire.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to forget. Okay. I don't want mosquitoes around my house. I check the containers every day or every other day. Okay. And even when I went away for 2 days and I got back, I'm telling you, I kill thousands of mosquitoes.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling.
Okay. Thank you.
And we'll move along to Fort Lauderdale caller. This is Hans. Hi there. Hans, you're up.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, Hans. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. There is a product which is sold, for example, like Home Depot. It's like grains, and you put them in the water in a pond or into the bromeliads, and it's supposed to kill the larvae. Are you familiar with that product?
Lowe's and Home Depot, they sell us with the name of mosquito bits. That's a bacterium, which is also known as
bits,
BTI.
B-I-T-S?
Mosquito bits, B-I-T-S.
Uh-huh.
This is a bacterium that kills the mosquito larvae when they ingest the spores of this. Normally are corn cob impregnated with the spores of the bacteria. That's what we use on a daily basis. It is a very good product, yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
That's a good idea, then.
Thank you for calling.
Yes, absolutely.
Dr. Stevenson, I understand that not only through sexual transmission, but also blood transfusions, Zika can be transferred. Is that correct?
Yeah. French Polynesia, they reported some cases of blood transfusion-related infections, and they have actually been screening the blood supply for the last 2 years now.
What about here?
Not yet.
And will that be done at some point? You don't know.
I can't answer that.
Okay.
I hope so.
Yeah. Okay. We have, we talked about this already, but we'll say it again, Chalmers. Bromeliads have become very popular in South Florida landscaping. This is Umberto. Are they a factor in mosquito propagation? Should we get rid of them?
Yes. We don't like to tell residents that. What we're telling them is you like bromeliads, they come with the responsibility to maintain it. And maintaining is don't let them breed mosquitoes. There are several ways that you can do that. You can remove your bromeliads if you want to. But you want to have them, you make sure you maintain it on a regular basis. You can flush them out, so dislodge the mosquito leg attached to the walls of to the size of the leaves. And you remove the larvae too. You buy one of this product, like mosquito bits.
A few of those.
Just drop it. But you need to be, doing it on an ongoing basis, because you forget, then you have a problem. And there is another product that is an insect growth regulator. What it does, that's not allow the mosquito to become the flying mosquito, but you need to be doing it on a constant basis.
What about people who take fresh flowers to cemeteries and put them in those?
Well, cemeteries are a problem too. The past that we have checked, inspected cemeteries, that we found those with mosquito larvae. Mosquitoes breed.
Isn't that a way you can count the population?
I'm sorry?
Isn't that a way you can count mosquito populations?
Well, yeah, you could do that too. But the important thing is that they do breed mosquitoes, and that may create a problem in the neighborhood where the cemeteries are.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can answer this, Dr. Stevenson, but Dr. Fauci has said that this is, that Zika is much scarier than first believed, and that was just a few months ago. How calamitous could this be in the U.S.?
Again, we're hoping for the best, but preparing for the worst. Based on what we know about dengue and other flaviviruses, some of these things like microcephaly should not be occurring, but they are occurring, and I think it's safe to say they're occurring because of Zika.
Okay.
So we should not try and predict the future based on what we know now, because we have a very limited understanding of this virus. So in terms of the microcephaly, that is calamitous. Unfortunately, the endemic regions are already hard hit economically, and for various other reasons. So this is just an added hit on those vulnerable populations. So we need to respond to this very, very quickly.
Tell us a little more about this Zika virus. It's monoclonal. What does that mean, and how does it survive so well?
monoclonal. I'm not sure what that what monoclonal
I've
means.
I've just seen it described as a monoclonal virus.
That probably refers to its lack of genetic diversity, that it has a, it doesn't mutate like HIV, for example. So the immune system is able to fixate on it. So antibodies that we generate against Zika virus will protect us very effectively. So if we have a vaccine, that vaccine will not be thwarted by genetic variability in Zika like it is with HIV. So the virus is something that we can deal with. The we will be able to make a vaccine against the virus. We will come up with drugs that block the virus, and we won't be forced to deal with the genetic variability of the virus the same way.
For those of
HIV.
You who've tuned in late, can we just go over what you've done, the basic things that the average person, what precautions they should take, and what we're facing?
The precautions have already been articulated, that it's vector control and protection of yourself with DEET, with long clothing, avoiding standing water. But in terms of the scientific war on Zika, it's about developing antibodies that can perhaps ameliorate the symptoms, perhaps prevent transmission of the virus from the mother to the fetus. And until we have a vaccine that can provide lifelong immunity.
Do we want to take a quick call?
We really don't.
We don't have time.
No.
Okay. Well, this we already discussed, but I guess they turned in late. If you, Dr. Stevenson, would address the neurological effects of the Zika virus, which can affect persons with compromised immune systems, leaving them with temporary paralysis.
The virus is infecting neurons. It's infecting the cells of the central nervous system. And so for that reason, we're going to have symptoms of damage to the central nervous system. Guillain-Barré or a Guillain-Barré-like set of symptoms. But again, that's rare, and it varies from individual, from severe to life-threatening, depending on the individual.
And complete paralysis.
And complete paralysis. But that complete paralysis is not permanent.
Well, we certainly want to thank you for the information.
We want to thank you. Dr. Mario Stevenson is professor of medicine, chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at the Miller School of Medicine at the University of Miami. He's an internationally known HIV/AIDS researcher. Thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate
Chalmers Vasquez is Miami-Dade County's Mosquito Control Operations Manager and an entomologist. Chalmers Vasquez, thank you very much for being
with
us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And thank you for tuning in this hour. We hope you found the program helpful. It was produced by Polly Landis with technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Richard Ives is lead producer. As always, we have free audio archives of this and other programs for download at our website. That's WLRN.org. And more information plus links at the Topical Currents Facebook page. So join us for an At Your Service edition. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, our focus is on contractor home repairs, particularly with emphasis on possible hurricane-related damage. Many new residents have little idea what a storm aftermath may bring. We hope new residents are not educated this summer.
Tomorrow's the start.
Indeed. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.